We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey Dan, we're going on the road at the end of August, are we not?
True, absolutely we are.
Not only are we going on the road, we're going to your neck of the woods, downtown Chicago, Beat Kitchen, Fantasy Things Live Draft 2022. It is the cornerstone, the bedrock, the crown jewel of all the live shows that we're going to do over the course of the next couple months. And we want to see Verballers in the flesh, in person. Come on out, Beat Kitchen. Where can people buy tickets?
SolidVerbalLive.com. Really easy to remember, SolidVerbalLive.com if you're in the surrounding areas. If you have extra miles, if you have hotel points, I'm not saying you should definitely use it to see how handsome Ty is in person, 6'3", a chiseled 220. But it's an idea. It's a consideration because it's a great time. It's an interactive show. We'll do a Q&A that is very specific to the live audience. We will not be putting that online anywhere. So we really do hope to see you. It's a blast every year to every year we're able to do it, to do the show in front of a live audience, and can't wait to see you in Chicago.
SolidVerbalLive.com. Buy your tickets today before we are all out.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand, that fine gentleman over there, as always, my beloved co-host. He is one of a kind. Today he is talking about the Big Ten West. He is in Big Ten West territory. He is the esteemed Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm terrific, and anybody can just talk Big Ten East, but the Big Ten West, for reasons I will lay out momentarily, is the thinking man's division in the Big Ten. I'm going to say it right now once again. The thinking man or woman or human or border collies division in the Big Ten. How about that?
I love it. Today's Big Ten West preview driven by our good friends over at Geico. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you've already hit the subscribe button, tell your friends, man. We want to get as many people in here getting ready for the college football season as humanly possible. Tell them to go to solidverbal.com or wherever fine podcasts can be downloaded, sold, accessed, what have you. Verballers.com, that's our Patreon. You get access to this show, all of our shows, a little bit early. There are also a bunch of other perks that come along with being a certified or premium Verballer. One more time, VERBALLERS.com. And last but certainly not least, we said it on the last show, we're still looking for some social media help, Dan. We need a person, first and foremost, who likes the show. Got to know the Solid Verbal. Got to love the Solid Verbal. Got to know college football. Got to love college football. These are the two main prerequisites of this job, by the way, which we will be paying somebody to do, I should also add. What else do we got here? We need some body of work. So you got to send us portfolio, a resume. Just prove that you've done it before. Prove that you understand all the social platforms. Got to be able to cut some of our smiling faces, right? Like, not literally cut, but cut the video footage, right? That's what you do.
Yes.
You also got to know some Photoshop. Just comes with the territory. If you are interested in joining the team, the place to send your portfolio, your resume, all the good stuff is the email address apply@solidverbal.com. One more time, that email address is apply@solidverbal.com. If we like what we see, we will enthusiastically reach back out.
Yeah.
If you are interested, we would love to work with you. So here is the deal on these preview shows. As we've been doing rather clumsily in some cases.
Yeah.
We've been trying to find a movie comp for all of these divisions that we've previewed. This is now the sixth preview episode that we've put together. In each of them, we have called back to some popular movie, something that people know, something that people in some cases love, something that people can relate to, because college football is broad and there's all these teams and there's so much nuance and new players and transfers and coaches. And it's a lot, man. It's a lot.
It's a ton.
We just want to give you something to hang your hat on. The last episode, it was The Rock. Okay, go back and listen to why I drew that comparison. Episodes before that, we had all sorts of other movies.
I did the Rocky IV montage music. I did Step Brothers.
We've done all sorts of movies that people know and love. And on today's episode, what is our comp for the Big Ten West?
I'm doing Ocean's 11, and I'm doing Ocean's 11.
You're either in or you're out right now.
For a very specific reason. I feel as if the Big Ten West is looked at as like, well, they're not as good, so whoever's coming out of the East is going to win it. Perhaps. But also perhaps this is the year, maybe next year is the year, but I'm going to stick with this year, that there's a crew of able-bodied thieves who are angling to steal the Big Ten away from the East. And what they are using to do so is commitment. Okay. Committing to the bit. And that's what Danny Ocean is asking for right there. Commitment. We have a lot of flawed people in this crew, but committed to one very specific element of the scheme. And that's what I can appreciate. But by the way, Ocean's 11, terrific.
Really terrific movie. Still holds up, by the way.
Yeah, still holds up.
Yeah.
And there are for sure ringleaders within the Big Ten West, but in the end, the identity of the division is commitment to a very specific role in the football landscape and doing things on the football field. So you look across, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's running the ball, whether it's passing the ball, there is something about commitment with this division that I think makes it fascinating, that it doesn't just come down to who has the best recruiting class every year. That's what I like about the Big Ten West, because you can make the case for a number of teams not necessarily being the best, but doing just enough to waltz into Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis because they've won the West. So that's why I love it. I think it's wide open. It's, you know, as good, no matter how good Iowa is, they'll probably lose or come close to losing to Northwestern, no matter how good Northwestern is. So there are certain things that you just understand to be true about the West that I love.
As you look across the Big Ten West landscape, is there a Danny Ocean? Is there a ringleader here?
Yeah, somebody, the leader, the figurehead, somebody who is establishing the identity of the crew, it's Barry Alvarez. It's absolutely.
Is he going to be coaching a bowl game randomly for any of these teams this year?
Always on the table. Okay. But he's out, but maybe they'll pull him back in. Like Danny Ocean away, coming back in. No, I mean, the blueprint of running the ball in defense is something that I think rings pretty true to every single one of these teams, perhaps other than the modern version of Purdue. Other than Purdue, Northwestern wants to play defense and run the ball. Iowa wants to play defense and run the ball. Wisconsin wants to play defense and run the ball. All of these teams. Minnesota has run the ball more often than any Power 5 team over the last 3 years. I mean, last year specifically, I think they ran it like 67% of the time were intended rushes, so not just scrambles or something like that. So it's run the ball and defense. Minnesota fielded a top probably 12, 15. Joe Rossi's unit was nationally one of the better defenses in the country. So that blueprint, that ringleader can be that sort of identity can be traced back to Alvarez Ball, Barry Ball.
We're talking hard-nosed Barry Ball. We're talking bruiser with Danny Ocean supposedly in the back room punching him, beating his brains in, just that boom.
Yep. Illinois boom. With what they're doing now. Yep.
Making that whimpering sound, right? This is Barry Ball. This is bad. This is a physical brand of football in the Big Ten West.
Absolutely. So we started with Michigan because they won the division last year. They earned the top spot atop our preview for the East. Do you want to start with Iowa? Do you want to start with Barry Ball's own Wisconsin Badgers? Where do you want to begin?
No, I think out of respect to Iowa and what they did last season, a 10-4 season for Iowa.
Yeah.
An impressive showing. Look, there were definitely moments last year where I don't think you or I fully trusted in the Iowa Hawkeyes, but a double-digit win season is not easy, especially in the Big Ten. Where do we stand on Iowa moving forward?
More of the same. More of the same, that they're going to win a bunch of games because of their defense and doing just enough on offense, or doing just enough overall to win games. And you're talking about an Iowa team who nearly scored a touchdown in the Big Ten championship game in their biggest game of the season, getting demolished by Michigan. But even still, even with the deficiencies, even with the offense and their attempts to get better on offense and their non-attempts to hire an offensive coordinator who's not related to the head coach, they remain really, really good. They remain a really, really good team. And the narrative is the same. The narrative is the same that, I mean, this year the defensive line should be better. Linebacker should be very strong. The secondary should be borderline incredible because they probably have the best cornerback in the Big Ten in Riley Moss. So not much is going to change on offense. Tyler Goodson's gone. Sam Laporte is really good. The offensive line should be a little bit better than it was last year, even losing their best player at center. They don't have anybody who really should scare you out wide. They're not going to take a ton of chances deep, and their quarterbacks are not especially accurate, and they're going to be asked to just be not bad, not catastrophic. And so that's the storyline with Iowa. I don't see a lot of quarterbacks in the Big Ten who can make Iowa pay for playing that brand of football because their defense is so good and they're able to turn over teams at an alarming rate. So it's a lot of the same. I would imagine there's some hope that somebody unexpected will step up on this offense. But if you're winning 10 games without offense, yes, what could you do with an offense? But also, why are we reinventing the wheel here in Iowa City?
I'm seeing the over-under at 7.5 for Iowa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that feel low to you?
Probably. I'm just not wild about the quarterbacks on their schedule. Iowa State's going to have a new quarterback, and they always just win the Cy-Hawk game. That's in week two. There's nothing really crazy back-to-back until they're on the road against Purdue and Wisconsin. It's Purdue, Wisconsin. It's at Purdue, Wisconsin, at Minnesota, Nebraska. They get Michigan and Ohio State from the East, but really the appeal is they play defense better than anyone does anything, arguably, unless you are a similar believer in Wisconsin's defense. And I think they're, you know, better suited to play high level defense than Wisconsin's this year than what anybody does anything in the Big Ten West. So I think it's low. I think it's low. I think Iowa State will be a challenge, but really I can see where 8-9 wins come from. It's not all that difficult.
Yeah. The question for Iowa is Brian Ferentz. The question for Iowa is always offense. And I'm curious in your self-study of Iowa, if you saw any obvious signs that they could turn this around, that they could make this a little bit more explosive, just a little marginally better with their defense. Again, it doesn't take a whole lot of excess offense to make them a much better team because the defense plays at such a high level. Are there any signs of additional life there? Are we still kind of back where we were last season and like the 15 seasons prior?
We have seen games in which Iowa quarterbacks, you go, you know, Nate Stanley against Ohio State, you know, Spencer Petras here and there. We saw him light up, I believe, Maryland last year, which is not an enormous accomplishment. But we've seen spots in which otherwise unspectacular, to say the least, quarterbacks for the Hawkeyes have randomly been excellent. And so maybe we see a little more of that. Not 9 games of excellence, but 3 games of excellence, 3 games of competent, and 3 games of, well, they didn't kill us.
Right.
So that to me is the hope, that experience helps Iowa at quarterback, whoever the starting quarterback is. The offensive line gets better at opening up lanes on the ground, because for as good as Tyler Goodson was, offensive line didn't do him a ton of favors. and that somebody unexpectedly, because of the portal, because of for whatever reason, pops at receiver enough to the point where teams have to more often keep two safeties back and succumb to the gravity of having somebody out wide for Iowa. That's the hope, that everybody can grow with experience and get better and just execute more often, especially in big games, that Iowa's not going to lose something stupid to Northwestern, and that they're going to be the team, they're going to beat the teams they should beat. That gets them to 8-9 wins every year.
So you're optimistic to some extent.
Yeah, they've got what appears to be a very strong linebacker in Jack Campbell. They always seem to have one or two linebackers who are incredible. I don't know, if you can tackle really well in the open field and force turnovers at an alarmingly high rate, I don't know. They added, by the way, if you want a specific nugget, they added the Patriot League's best tight end.
Best tight end, yeah, that's right.
So there's that.
My thing with Iowa is the schedule. I mean, you went through the schedule. It's a tough draw to get both Michigan and a road game against Ohio State.
Yep.
That's tough. And even though the schedule is buffered well enough, there are decent buffers here where there's not a ton of games back to back. There are no gauntlets that truly scare me. I just feel like anything better than 9-3 is kind of a miracle. You know, sure. 9-3 is a good season. I'm not demeaning that, but anything better than that, if they got back to double digit wins this coming season, like that would be amazing. That'd be incredible.
I mean, the case for them going 11-1 is not a strenuous case.
I know.
They're generally good enough to beat Michigan with that defense in Michigan. Now Michigan should have a better offense this year. They have more playmakers. But I began this with saying that they almost scored a touchdown against Michigan last year. I don't know. There's just something about Iowa that it's pulling teeth to beat them. Even when you win, it's not comfortable. And so with their schedule, are they going 10-2 and losing to Michigan and Ohio State? Likely no. But
yeah,
I don't know. What's so different about this year's Iowa? They don't have like a standout All-American caliber edge rusher, which you'd like to have. You'd like to have an Adrian Claiborne type or something like that. But when you have the back end that they have and the quarterbacks that they're facing, why can't they win more games 24-13?
No,
I don't know. I don't have a good answer. So I'm as per usual for recent Iowa results, plenty high on the Hawks, and they'll have a dud game. And then they're going to beat a good team. I don't know.
Let's go over to Wisconsin.
Okay.
Wisconsin felt like a disappointment to me last year.
That's right.
You know, they're another team that I think falls into the category of wanting to, or at least fans wanting to see a little bit more innovation on offense, something different, something that kind of goes beyond the norm as we've come to expect it in Madison. I think we talked about it on the podcast last year, right? Like, at some point, Paul Chris has to adapt this. He has to change this if he wants to get this team any better. The defense always plays to a pretty high level, but they've definitely been lacking to some extent, at least at the quarterback position, maybe since Russell Wilson left. You know, it's been a while since they had a true difference maker at that quarterback spot. They were fine at running back. They're always fine at running back, though it took them a little bit to find their guy. Mm-hmm. What does
Chez Malusi got hurt? Yeah.
Yeah. What does 2022 look like? Specifically on that offensive side for Wisconsin.
To go back to Danny Ocean, they're in. Wisconsin is in on trying to pivot and evolve. They hire a new offensive coordinator in Bobby Engram. They hit the portal for, I mean, both corner and receiver, but they seem to be more proactive in knowing what they have to fix. They didn't win a Power 5 game until October 9th last year, Ty.
Yep.
October 9th was their first Power 5 win. You remember the extremely slow start against Penn State and Michigan and Notre Dame. So essentially, what they're trying to do is recognize that they've not wasted excellent running backs, but weren't able to build around that kind of running back and offensive line performance in the way that perhaps stronger teams generally are able to do. And so they are, whether it's trying to develop that, you know, winter wonder, they, you know, Quintez Cephas seems to be like an island. They've always had the good tight ends. They'll have a good tight end this year. The question really just is, how are they making defenses pay for playing 8-9 dudes in the box? And is Bobby Engram that guy? And he has experience with Paul Chryst. But is he that guy to get more creative on offense with the run game, to get more creative on offense with, and I'm not saying shots, you got to have dudes going downfield that are threats to really feel good about taking those shots, but to be creative in the intermediate game. Because at this point, I'm not saying Graham Mertz is what he is, but he needs the makeup. He needs the lipstick. He needs the polish to be the best possible version of Graham Mertz as possible. And I don't think we got that. We saw spurts. We saw a couple of instances where you're like, oh, that was an interesting, really strong throw that seemed unusual for Graham Mertz. We need that more often. We need that five times more often for Wisconsin. So they lose a number of key contributors on defense, namely at linebacker. Jack Sanborn was great, but they're going to be strong at linebacker again. They'll be strong in the secondary, although they had to dip into the portal a little bit for secondary help. They're going to be good. I think Jim Leonard is probably one of the best 8 defensive coordinators in the country, something like that, when you see the consistent results. But they still, they have that problem up front of not having, look, it's easy to say like J.J. Watt or something like that. Like, that's just a dude situation on both sides of the ball. I think Braylon Allen can be. I think a couple of these linebackers can be. But the Wisconsin story is one of just like consistency, good development. But when push comes to shove against Notre Dame or Michigan or Penn State or whoever, Ohio State, that they just don't have the guys. And so the appeal is defense and Braylon Allen. It's nothing crazy. And the appeal is the glimmer of hope that Bobby Engram can be their own version of Danny Ocean or one of the crew members of
well,
the heist.
And what's so interesting about the Ocean's 11 comp is that at least for the first two teams that we described, I don't know, maybe it'll change as we get a little bit deeper into this. I can't think of two teams that are less Ocean's 11. Ocean's 11, okay. A movie built around a convoluted plot. Everything has to go just so. It's complicated. It takes the right crew. It takes the right timing, practice. Like, it was so complicated. It's very straightforward for both of these teams, isn't it? I mean, it's we're going to play defense. We're going to bash your brains in with defense.
So they're the demolition experts. They're basher. They're basher. Yeah, 11.
It's whatever we can get out of our offense, I think, is ultimately what defines the level of success, not just for Iowa, but also for Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're trying to do similar things with similar questions at quarterback, but Wisconsin at least seems to be more proactive in terms of getting into the vault of respectable offense.
Yeah. Is the line okay? The offensive line?
Wisconsin?
Yeah, still okay?
Yeah, Wisconsin's line should be good. They made the change at offensive line coach. Joe Rudolph, I believe, is with Virginia Tech in like a co-coordinator role. So a little bit of change there, a little bit of shuffling position-wise, but it appears to be, once again, a strength.
Well, we'll have to keep our eyes on Braylon Allen. Braylon Allen had a great breakout campaign last season, almost 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns. Big kid, really big kid, 6.8 per carry. And he really was kind of the focal point of that offense, because Graham Mertz, if you look at his numbers, I mean, won't go too deep into the stats here, but 10 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, completion percentage under 60%, just a shade under 60%. A far cry from the promise of Graham Mertz back in the day when he threw 5 touchdowns against Illinois. I always come back to that first game, you know, because we thought after that he was going to be the heir apparent.
You were seduced. You were catfished.
Yeah. I was seduced. Hasn't quite worked out to that extreme.
Yeah. And it's okay. And I think the big thing with Wisconsin as well is if they're not able to find that winter wonder, if they're not able to go downfield a ton, is who are the fresh legs in the backfield? Is, you know, when we looked at the best of Wisconsin's offense, it's not just about that lead guy, but it's about the second guy. It's about the third guy. So if it is Ches Malusi, whoever it is, if Wisconsin's coming at you with fresh legs, they become an even bigger nightmare, especially, I know they have Ohio State early on this schedule. They have Wazoo and Cameron Ward,
Cam Ward
at
baby.
Quarterback.
Yeah.
They are, I think they host Wazoo though, so at least that's at Camp Randall. And they're decent buffers, really. There's not a lot of meaty middles or back-to-backs that are scary.
I disagree.
It ends tough. It ends tough at Iowa, at Nebraska, and Minnesota, but I don't know. Wisconsin is just, you can kind of set your watch to them showing up against lesser opponents.
I'm curious about this stretch of games kind of in the middle here. At Ohio State next week, home against Illinois, I could see that being a letdown game. Illinois will be plucky. Well, you could tell me. At Northwestern, forget it. I'm not worried about that game. And then at Michigan State, I could see that being a rough stretch, because I'm pretty high on Ohio State, as you know. And I also feel like Michigan State's going to be going to be in a better spot defensively than they were a year ago. So that stretch is not super easy either.
I hear you, but you're including Ryan Helinski and Tommy DeVito as key components of that stretch. Like, what are we talking about? throwing into it what I think is going to be another, and there are new faces in the back end. I hear you on the Wisconsin defense, but still, I don't know. Illinois with a new offensive coordinator and a Syracuse quarterback transfer, I think is fine, and he had a good spring, and we'll get there. And a recent historically awful Northwestern offense? Like, I don't know. You're going to have to do more to convince me that that's an actual stretch rather than not just like filler between games.
Fair enough. Let's go over to Minnesota.
Okay. I want to talk about Minnesota because I want to love Minnesota. I don't, but I want to.
Okay. Talk me through this, because on the show a couple months back, I was advertising I like Minnesota over 7.5. It's
okay.
I think a veteran team, right? You would know more than me at this point, but I think they've got enough back. I like the fact actually that they brought back Kirk Shiraka because the Mike Sanford experience was not good. That didn't really work at all on offense. And this is a program that just seems like they're laying in wait. They are going to take out somebody. It's just a matter of time before we figure out who they're going to beat most of the teams that they're supposed to. And they're going to finish with 8 or 9 wins.
When they made that move to Joe Rossi from, I think it was Rob Smith a few years ago, and paid immediate dividends. The defense has been largely very good. The 2020 COVID year was a nightmare, but otherwise the defense, especially last year and how good they were on passing downs. The problem with falling in love with Minnesota is the amount that they lost up front on both sides of the ball, the amount that they lost along the offensive line, the amount they lost up front of quality NFL caliber players is a problem. Now, in terms of getting the band back together, Ocean's 11 style, Kirk Shiraka is back, paired with P.J. Fleck.
Yeah.
They go back to Western Michigan. They go back to their time, and I believe it was 2019 when they were incredible with, you know, Tyler Anderson, Rashad Bateman, and Tanner Morgan, who can now co-sign your lease. He's old enough. If you're renting in Minneapolis, hit up Tanner Morgan. His credit is impeccable. He's mature. He'll help you out. No, Mo Ibrahim's healthy. You know, when he was flashing, he looked to be pretty dominant. He looked like trying to tackle a vending machine or something like that. And he just got hurt. And they decided last year, and maybe it's addition by subtraction, going back to Kirk Shiraka, Mike Sanford is out now at Colorado. They were so borderline predictable in how often they ran. They ran more than anybody, and they were pretty bad at it. They were pretty ineffective at it, I should say. They weren't bad at it. I think the backs were pretty good in Mo Ibrahim's stead, but they're gone. They lost a couple backs to transfer, and so they're a little bit thinner at skill position. Chris Ottman-Bell, hopefully he's healthy at receiver. I think Minnesota is merely good, but I'm not sure exactly what to be scared of. Like, you look up and down, they hit the transfer portal hard. They lost guys in the transfer portal at a significant clip, but they were pretty good passing, but they didn't pass a ton last year. So the question to me is like, what is their actual identity this year?
Yeah.
Are they going to continue to try to hammer Mo Ibrahim? Are they going to trust Tanner Morgan a little bit more? Are they going to find, because what they were in 2019 was largely because of the RPO game and the gravity of those receivers. And I don't think they're at that level. And I always do like a team who, I always like a position group that the head coach has a background coaching, you know, Nick Saban and DBs and stuff like that. And PJ Fleck's background is with receivers. But I merely like Minnesota. I think they'll have a good defense, but I think it's going to fall off. I think they're going to have probably a better offense because I don't think Mike Sanford's all that good. So all in all, I think it evens out to like a 7-8 win season. I don't know if you have their over under in front of you right now.
It's 7.5.
Tough road slate.
It's a tough road slate at Michigan State, at Penn State, at Nebraska, at Wisconsin. There's also a Illinois road game in there the week before Penn State. The thing that I like about the schedule, though, is how easy it starts. It starts out really easily if you're Minnesota. Yeah. You're probably going 3-0 to start the year. New Mexico State, Western Illinois, Colorado. Those are 3 wins.
You ever watch a September Minnesota game, though, Ty?
I've had that unfortunate pleasure, yes.
You're just like, oh, Will this safety, will, what was Antoine Winfield, is he going to bail them out this year, 4 years into his NFL career? Like, that's the question, is there's a very weird, slow startiness to the Gophers.
Yeah. I mean, there is a chance on this schedule, if they run the table, if they knock off Michigan State on the road, which I think is entirely plausible, they could be bowl eligible by week seven. We could be talking about an undefeated Minnesota going into that road game against Penn State. And it's at a bad spot for Penn State. It's a sandwich spot between Michigan and Ohio State. So if that comes to fruition, even if it doesn't come to fruition where Minnesota's undefeated, they catch Penn State in a weird spot. I could definitely invent the scenario in which they get it together through the early part of their schedule, as Michigan State maybe is still trying to figure out some stuff of their own on defense, and they're able to rattle off six in a row. That would be right. That would be a really nice start. Now, how likely is that? I'm not sure. I have questions as well. Do you like PJ Fleck, by the way? Are you a PJ Fleck guy?
I think he's fine. I think if he recruited as consistently as he did early on in his career, I think I'd like him more, because I think I'd be able to count on guys popping in, you know, the Daniel Falele and Rashad Bateman kind of mold, where it seems like they have fewer and fewer of those guys. And I'm a little bit worried about the offensive skill that has left recently. So, yeah, I like him fine. And Minnesota's not the easiest place to win, especially in this division with how good the defenses are, and this conference with how deep it seems to be at or near the top. To get Minnesota to where he did a couple years ago, I think it's pretty special. I think he's a good coach. I think he may have a ceiling. That's all.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Hopefully they can generate more big plays this year. They were definitely in the bottom tier of college football teams when it came to explosiveness. And I think you alluded to as much. How do they generate some of those bigger plays? How do they be less predictable? The Mike Sanford thing was not great.
No.
Maybe getting Kirk Shiraka back in the fold can potentially change that. They were good when they had him.
Yep.
So we'll see.
It's all about M's, by the way, the characters you need to know. It's Mo, it's Morgan, and MSM. It's Mariano Sorry Marin, at linebacker, MSM. Not just a weird controversial business decision that is pursued by somebody on your Facebook. I know it's MLM, but still.
I gotcha.
Minnesota's in a good place. Just, I think they're good enough to basically beat everybody they come across, other than, they don't have Ohio State, right? They don't have Michigan, nor do they have Ohio State on their schedule. So that's nice in terms of scheduling. But the road stuff worries me, that I think I would take seven before I take eight.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths, and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We covered Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. I presume those are the top three.
I think I like Nebraska more than Minnesota.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So Nebraska last season, 3-9, a historic 3-9, in that it was nine losses by, what, one score? Certainly,
yeah,
by
Scott
single
Frost
digits.
At Media Day said we were in every game.
They were in every game. Sure.
It's not just the in every game. It's the winning every game. It's not just the taking the reservation. It's the holding.
You do get the sense, though, that they weren't that far off. It wasn't a bad team. We talked ad nauseum about their defense last year. Could have used more consistency for sure at the quarterback position, just on offense in general. And they had injuries to deal with. Like, it wasn't exactly fair to say that this was a bad team, but they were a bad team. Right?
They did bad team things.
They did bad team things despite having a lot of talent. And I think having a lot of promise. So as we go into this season, Scott Frost has been very active, not only in bringing over Casey Thompson, but trying to change up the offense. I think making a very public and concerted effort to prove that he is going to try and turn this thing around. And a lot of folks, I'm assuming yourself included, are pretty high on the Huskers just in terms of getting to a bowl, right? I would have to assume that that's like minimum viable product for 2022.
Yeah. Look, I'm a quarterback in defense. What does your quarterback look like? What does your defense look like? I think Nebraska's defense will be fine, though they're pretty thin up front. I think they'll be all right at linebacker. We'll see on the secondary. So the thing is with Adrian Martinez, and now going into the Casey Thompson era, is Adrian Martinez was a giveth and taketh away quarterback. I don't know exactly what Casey Thompson is giveth thing, or just giving. That's my issue, is what is it that Casey Thompson brings to the table with what has been a pretty shaky offensive line? And when Nebraska finally found that winter wonder at receiver in Wandale Robinson, he took off. And so every year seems to be, when you read the previews, when you watch the spring game, it's announcers and writers saying, well, Frost is pretty high on Omar Manning or whoever. And you get a lot of measurables rather than deliverables, if that makes any sense, that you're like, this guy's 6'5", and you're like, cool, so was my college roommate. Does he score touchdowns against good teams? Because my college roommate didn't, because he was in the band. So the problem is, sorry, am I making you cough while you're drinking water? I apologize.
I'm drinking water out of my solid verbal glass. Continue.
Okay. There's too much of that. There's too much of, like, he threw the javelin in high school. And like, how does that translate to like red zone prowess? It generally doesn't. So that to me is where one, how many offensive coordinators and how many stated, how many times has Scott Frost stated, you know, God, they're just buying in a way that the guys haven't before. It's like, okay, all right. Well, now it's Casey Thompson coming off of a thumb injury, transferring in, new coordinator, new quarterback. And on a certain level, you could say, well, that's, you know, it's a fresh start. It's a reboot. But why do they need a fresh start? Why do they need a reboot? What are the commonalities every year? Like, is special teams finally going to be at least okay this year? I hope, because it's been a nightmare. It's been a nightmare in Lincoln. And we talk about hidden yards. Nebraska gives them away. Nebraska just gives them away. So I think they're going to be pretty good. I think at their best, they'll be pretty good. If they make fewer mistakes, if special teams is more competent, they'll win a bunch of games. The great thing is, as well, Ty, their schedule is amazing.
It's not bad. I was
their
just looking at it.
Their schedule is spectacular. And I say that knowing they have Oklahoma early on their schedule, but the game is in Lincoln. They were competitive last year. If it's evident that they've turned a corner, that they have plans in the red zone, that on third down, they're finding the right guy, whatever, there's no reason they can't start 6-2, 7-1 by November, whenever eight games are up. It's Northwestern in Ireland, Oklahoma at Purdue. Those are like the interesting tough games early. And then the November stretch is Minnesota at Michigan, Wisconsin at Iowa. Difficult, absolutely difficult. But again, if Nebraska has turned a corner and they're finishing drives and they're not giving the ball away, good enough to win 7-8 games. Absolutely they are. With that schedule, there's a lot of appeal there.
I've got this schedule highlighted and labeled as having a December to remember.
Yep.
Dating back to our Secret Cake schedule episode, which you can go back and listen to. November, yes, is very difficult, but it starts off, and I think, in a really advantageous way. The Casey Thompson thing to me is really interesting because, you know, I didn't do the deep dive on Nebraska quite the way you did, but I've been reading about them, and there is certainly a lot of excitement about Casey Thompson. And what I'm struggling a little bit with is Casey Thompson was on a good offense last year. Granted, really soft up front, not a great line. And there were challenges, year one, new coach, the whole nine yards there. But it wasn't like that was an offense without weapons. And so correct. I'm just curious if, I mean, obviously a change of scenery is good for him. He's going to get the playing time. And I do believe Casey Thompson is better, certainly a different kind of quarterback than Adrian Martinez. But what I'm struggling to really figure out is how much better and what does he give them above and beyond what we've grown accustomed to seeing over the last couple of years. I don't think it's a slam dunk that Casey Thompson goes to Lincoln, Nebraska, and suddenly this is like a 7-win team. I think the schedule makes it such that as long as they don't screw up and shoot themselves in the foot as they do the fundamentals fairly well enough, they'll be in a bowl. But Casey Thompson is like this huge difference maker. I've seen some previews that are really talking to like best quarterback in the Big Ten West, definitely right. in the conversation in the Big Ten as a whole. I hope so, but let's pump the brakes a little bit because he was on a pretty good offense last year.
And I know that there has been attention given to Mark Whipple and how he was able to be a part of the development of Kenny Pickett, yeah. Jordan Addison. Like, there aren't those guys for Casey Thompson to throw to. So let's say best case scenario. Best case scenario, Casey Thompson is a B, okay? And his receivers are Bs, and his beat up tight end group is a B, and his offensive line is a B minus or something like that. I don't know what their ceiling is as a group. These are the defenses that they face to start the season. Northwestern, North Dakota, Georgia Southern, Oklahoma, Indiana, Rutgers, Purdue, Illinois. That's up until November. So if we're just talking fine, not exceptional, who's putting the fear of life if Mark Whipple's calling a better game than whoever has been an offensive coordinator for Nebraska? You know he wants to throw it a ton, yeah. if you're to believe Pat Narduzzi. And so if Casey Thompson is healthy and there are two receivers who are not game changers, but fine, which one of those defenses makes you sit back in your chair and bite your nails?
No.
I don't see it.
None of them.
They could go, you know, 4-4 still. But at least on paper right now, I'm not exceptionally terrified for Casey Thompson and the players around him on this offense.
If Scott Frost goes 7-5, is he returning in 2023?
I guess it depends how he goes 7-5 and the margin by which he goes 7 and Nebraska goes 7-5.
He shouldn't go 7-5 with the schedule. He should get to 8 wins with this.
I agree with where Rutgers, Indiana, you know, the steps back Purdue will probably take at times. Illinois has a lot still ahead. Like, the problem is their final four games are losable.
Yeah.
So if you start the season 7-1, if my math is correct, and everybody says to themselves, Scott Frost figured it out.
Yeah.
He made shrewd hires. He hit the portal in all of the right ways. 7-1. They're going to a bowl. They're ranked 9th, 13th in the country. There's a tension on Nebraska that has been different. And then they just lose by double digits to end the year. And that's the taste that's left in Trev Alberts' mouth. I didn't anticipate using the phrase Trev Alberts' mouth when we're at the onset of
me
this
neither.
Show.
That's why I snorted. Continue.
That's the issue. That you beat Oklahoma, or maybe you lose to Oklahoma, but you win the other 7. Let's say the Oklahoma loss is 30-28 and it's just back and forth and it's impressive. Whatever. But then you lose to Minnesota by 14 and Iowa and Wisconsin, whatever. You lose a bowl game comfortably. And there's just not a lot of feel goods in the back room in Lincoln. Then I don't know. I think it could be enough to still see him go.
I want to like Nebraska. I want to like Nebraska. I want to root for Nebraska. I want to root for Scott Frost. I'd like to see them turn it around because, look, we've said it time and again here. It's not fun to be down for a good long time. That's not fun. Maybe if you're a rival, you know, maybe if you're a Colorado fan like Dan Carlin, you're reveling in the fact that Nebraska's having a hard time. But I don't think that makes anything more fun. So I'm legitimately rooting for it. I'm pulling for them. But I do have questions about that Casey Thompson thing. I like him. I'm having a hard time getting as excited as I know some others are. That's all.
I mean, the good thing for Nebraska is they've seen Casey Thompson shred Colorado, which they haven't been able to do. So there's that. They had a couple shots a couple years ago, weren't able to get it done. But yeah, and look, they have a good shot of of upsetting Oklahoma in the games that they're likely going to be dogs against, they have a good shot against, you know, they played well until they gave it away against Iowa. They've played well against good teams. And so it's just turning a corner. It's not, can we get close? Can we get competitive? They're already at a competitive place. So that's the good news.
Speaking of teams that are on Nebraska's early schedule, week zero, it is.
Yeah.
It is the day that you and I are going to be in Chicago, actually, doing our Fantasy Things live draft. We would encourage everybody to go to solidverbalive.com, as you heard at the top of the show, and buy your tickets while supplies last. It is Nebraska. It is Northwestern traveling to Dublin, Ireland to play a week zero game. Northwestern was bad last year.
Yeah.
Northwestern was 3-9. They were 1-8 in conference. There was a lot to dislike about this Northwestern team. And the biggest step back was on defense. This is a program done under Pat Fitzgerald, under their old regime with their old defensive coordinator, was really good on that side of the ball. Maybe slipped off a little bit in recent years, but not nearly to the extent that we saw in 2021. Offense has always been an issue. Without that defense to really prop up the offense, the whole thing collapsed. Is there any hope that Northwestern is turning this around? Are there any obvious solutions on your radar?
Yeah, it's an even year. 2020, 2018, really nice seasons from Northwestern, if I remember correctly. We've got a 2022 situation. So there's your immediate glimmer of hope for just nonsense reasons. Yeah, they could find a quarterback. If it's Brendan Sullivan, I guess would be the answer that isn't Ryan Helinski. We have a good amount of data from Ryan Helinski. Look, they might have the best left tackle in the sport randomly, because that's who Northwestern is. They're a weird team who will have bouts of success, but always develop like, yeah, a first round linebacker, a first round corner, and they have a good left tackle. They got a couple good running backs. My hope isn't that Northwestern is going to mount an average offense. My hope is that Northwestern is going to mount an offense that just doesn't lose them games.
Yeah.
That isn't embarrassing. So if Northwestern has the 87th best offense in the country, by whatever metric you choose, it's a success. That is a big, nice, impressive move. Now, does it mean they're going to win more games? Probably not, because I'm not a big believer in this defense. They've got a good rush end. The linebackers and the secondary should be fine. The problem is just week to week. Like, how much does Northwestern need to put together? You know, it's the, what is it called? You're going to know what it's called when the ball goes from the pulley and then it rolls down a ladder. And you know, the Rube Goldberg, is that what that's called?
Yeah.
There's just that everything needs to click just so with how Northwestern is built. Before, defense was good enough to keep most teams to 17 points or less. That's a nice way to win games, where you don't need to climb a giant mountain to win games. Now it has to be, you have to force turnovers, you have to get lucky in special teams, you're going to have to get a couple broken tackles on an end around on offense. There's just so much that needs to happen for Northwestern to get to 6, 7, 8 wins again that it seems unlikely. They lose arguably their best defensive player to the portal, Notre Dame, and Brandon Joseph.
Yep.
It's just, it's more difficult the way they're going about things, or the way that, you know, because of some, you know, the academic limitations that they have to go about things. So that's the problem to me, that Pat Fitzgerald, who across the board, people associated with Northwestern love the guy, and probably for good reason. I think he just got an extension. He's getting paid $6-7 million. But that he hasn't dipped into the FCS ranks or the G5 ranks to find a coordinator, an up and coming coordinator who will say, this is my vision to reboot this offense. And they're sort of going after kind of like also rans and like just serving Pat Fitzgerald's desires for an offense. You're just going to peak around 90th in the country, 78th in the country. Like the chances Northwestern's recent offenses have taken in terms of scheme, in terms of transfers, in terms of, you know, just pivots in general, it leaves everything to be desired.
One of the other things that jumped out to me just at a cursory glance, this was quite literally in all of college football, all of FBS, the second worst special teams unit.
Yep.
Which we don't talk enough about that here, right? We focus on the big names and the offense and the defense and the bigger picture stuff. But at the margins, that's the kind of stuff that costs you games. That's not to say that Northwestern was fractionally away from being a bowl team. They weren't. But
right,
all these things working kind of in tandem do not help, especially when your special teams are bad. We talk a lot about the defense and how that bottomed out. Key metrics you could look at across the board. This is a team that was really bad in that havoc stat, right? The measure that Bill Connelly uses to measure difference makers on defense, tackles behind the line of scrimmage, sacks, things like that. They just weren't a playmaking defense. And so over the course of a season, that built up. And when you've got a bad offense, the offense was still way worse than the defense, by the way, even though the defense took a step back. But those two things working together absolutely worked against this team.
I mean, you mentioned special teams. They need special teams. They need to be able to pin teams. They need to make their field goals because they're going to be playing in, even at their best, they're going to be playing in close games. If they're able to get the most out of, you know, Cam Porter healthy, Evan Hull, who had a quietly decent season as a bright spot on that offense last year, there are seven winnable games. Like, why can't they go to Ireland and beat Nebraska, who started the season the way that they did last year in Champaign? I can tell you why they can't, but at the same time, everybody's flying overseas, things are weird, whatever. So let's say they win that game. Who do they have? Miami of Ohio, Duke coming of, like, Southern Illinois. I can be spoken into, I can have you speak into existence 4-0 Northwestern to start the season and then losing 1-2, you know, 3 of their next 4, 4 of their next 5, 5 of their next 6, but they finish with Purdue and Illinois. So they could go bowling if they're simply well-coached and do all the little things right on defense and special teams, and they run the ball well enough, and they make some field goals. But again, a Rube Goldberg apparatus. And so, yeah. I don't know. I have them at 5-7 at best.
That's aggressive.
Yeah. What's their over-under?
I don't have their
over-under.
3.5?
4.5? Okay.
I can't believe it'd be higher than 4, 4.5.
Right. But that's what it needs. That's what it needs. Health. It needs better attention to detail. It means grabbing every single hidden yard. Because look, at Penn State, fine. If the defense is incredible, I don't see it. Wisconsin, no. At Iowa, well, they always beat Iowa or always are close to beating Iowa, so sure. Ohio State, no. At Minnesota, after Ohio State, probably not. At Purdue the week after that, I don't think so. So it's just, I don't know. 5-7 seems like the best case.
Northwestern's over-under, by the way.
Northwestern, yeah.
Even 4.
What is it? An even 4?
An even 4, yeah.
Okay. So I guess I have a right around the same point.
Let's stay in the great state of Illinois.
You love that.
Let's go to Illinois. Let's go to Brett Bielema. We liked talking about Illinois last year, actually. Illinois was an interesting case. They were definitely one of the teams on my pluck radar. They seemed to play hard. They didn't have all the pieces in place. Brett Bielema acknowledged as much when he basically said, I didn't even want these offensive linemen, whatever that comment was. About his line, we know he's a guy who likes to base everything around having that beef up front. Beat Penn State in the crazy 18 million overtime game. And I feel like there was some optimism at the end of last season. It just felt like definitely a changing of the guard was a good thing for the Illini. Is there like a step forward coming for Brett Bielema this season? Or is it still just a case of, they got to get the guys. It's going to take a while till they get all those guys in place.
People seem reasonably high on Tommy DeVito, who might just be in a better situation in Champaign than he was in at Syracuse. They have two good running backs, it seems, Chase Brown and Josh McCray. They are worthy of earning a benefit of the doubt along the offensive line, which Brett Bielema talked about early on in his tenure as being kind of a nightmare and putting out an open listing on Craigslist for offensive linemen, essentially, which was taken out of context for sure. Yeah. But his history has earned him and his programs a benefit of the doubt in terms of what he wants out of them, what he wants out of an offensive line coach, how they get developed, how they get ID'd, et cetera. They don't have Winter Wonders at receiver. They have a guy named Isaiah Williams, which is cool. So they have a non-juice Isaiah Williams. So yep. That's good. The defense last year was impressively stout, led by linebackers, especially considering the turnover, but from going coach to coach. But the defense was pretty good last year. I think Ryan Walters and, if you remember this name, Kevin Kane, who was at SMU.
Yeah.
He was the Northern Illinois DC. And so Andy Boo is on this staff. So like it's a well-built defensive staff to me. So I expect decent things from this defense. I don't think there's star power on the defense necessarily, but I think they're going to be coached well and be in the right place more often than not. They make a change at offensive coordinator, going to Barry Lunney, who is at UTSA, but he has a history with Brett Bielema going back to Arkansas. And so Illinois seems to be one of the more aggressive teams committing to the pivot, saying it didn't work out last year with our coordinator. We didn't see the quarterback development we wanted to see from Brandon Peters. We're going this new direction. We're going with a familiar new direction. UTSA's offense developed nicely last year. So I think there's hope that Illinois in the short term can be the old man at pickup, just backing teams down in the low post. That you're like, he's sweaty, he's got the up and under, and he doesn't miss from 8 feet. That, yeah, you're gonna take him to the rack, of course, on a fast break, and there's nothing that he's gonna be able to do. But if you get matched up against him on the low block, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, but making shots from along came Pauly, it's just not gonna be fun to play him. And so that, to me, is a step forward. They beat flawed teams last year. They didn't beat a lot of them, but if Penn State's quarterback is hurt and the offense is all over the place and not blocking, Illinois is good enough to pick up that win off the opportunity truck. And I think they're going to continue to do so. When they can find those receivers, when they get better along the line, when they can hit the portal hard for guys on defense who can come in and make an immediate impact, they're going to be a consistent bowl team to me under Brett Bielema. So right now, they're just a hard out. Right now, you like the word frisky. They're just going to be a pain in the ass every week. And if you are overlooking them, if you are not taking them seriously, if you think you can coast on a simple game plan, there's a good shot that Illinois will beat you. That's a good place to be. Not a great place to be, but considering the young point in Brett Bielema's tenure right now, it's respectable.
Well, and it feels like there's a plan.
Yes.
You know, it feels like it's going somewhere. Oftentimes, coaches get to this stage. And the same is true for Rutgers. We talked about Rutgers on the last show. Say what you want about Rutgers, but it feels like Greg Schiano's trying to build something. Like, you can see very logically. Even Michigan State, Mel Tucker, who's had a lot more recent success, it makes sense. You can see where they're going with things. And I think Illinois, to some extent, falls into that same category. The over-under, by the way, is 4.5, which I think is a good number.
It's a decent number. Here's the issue. They start at Indiana and they have Virginia early on, which that'll test. I mean, their secondary should probably be the strength of this defense. They arguably have the meatiest Big Ten middle schedule-wise. The meat of Illinois' schedule: at Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, then a bye, at Nebraska, Michigan State, Purdue, at Michigan. That's the string tie.
Jeez.
So if everybody takes Illinois seriously and they go 4-8, it's not the worst. It's not the worst. If they can get to 5 wins this year, if the drive for 6 is rolling and they get to 6 wins, that's super crazy impressive from the Illini.
Well, we will advertise the drive for 6 on this show for all who celebrate, because it's just the thing that we've done ever since the infancy of the Solid Verbal, the drive for Illinois 6.
Absolutely.
We're rooting for them.
I respect the direction.
Let's go to the final team then.
Let's.
In the Big Ten West, we've talked about all the others. It's Purdue time, baby. Purdue 9-4 last year.
Purdue time, baby.
Yeah, had some standouts. David Bell, George Karloftis, both of whom are now gone. Aiden O'Connell still back. This was a very plucky team, a dangerous team last year that pulled some upsets. Fun to follow. One of the best stories all of last season in college football. The question then immediately goes to, can they do it again? Can they build on what we saw last season? I find it hard to believe. I know it's not my preview. I find it hard to believe that, and I talked about this a little bit with the Penn State Purdue opening line. It's like 2.5 or 3.5, depending on where you look. I find it hard to believe that Purdue is going to come out of the gate hot, knowing that they lose those two gravitational players, one on offense, one on defense.
Yeah.
Are you with me? Are you more optimistic? Like, where do you stand on these guys?
I stand where I normally stand, that if you are a specific good matchup for the Boilermakers, like Michigan State was with their pass defense, and how accurate Aiden O'Connell was and is, and how well Purdue seems to develop wide receivers. I mean, so that coach, Jamarcus Shepherd, is now at Washington, so they had to make a change there. They made a lot of coaching changes, which makes me a little bit uncomfortable, sometimes for good reasons. Brad Lambert's now the defensive coordinator at Wake Forest. I think Aiden O'Connell will be good. They were one of the absolute worst rushing teams last year, and Thus, they're one of the worst teams in the red zone. If you can't run the ball at all, it makes it pretty difficult on shorter fields to keep defenses honest. That's the worrisome thing to me, that there's a very specific way in which they can win, and that's being accurate and finding that bigger play eventually, because they don't generate them organically. Defensively, I think they should be okay up front, even without Big George. I think the secondary is, much like Illinois, probably the strength of this defense. I just think they need to win in a very specific way. And the context is different because Jeff Brohm has been in West Lafayette a lot longer than Brett Bielema has been in Champaign. So I don't know. I think they're a flirty bowl team-ish. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where things have to break correctly. And you mentioned having Penn State earlier on their schedule. Their schedule's not amazing.
Their schedule's weird. It's lumpy. It's one of those. It's like an ink blot test in a sense. You could look at it on one day and feel good about it. You could look at it on another day and be like, ooh, this is tougher than meets the eye. Let me read through it quick.
Okay.
Week one, Penn State at home, which we've referenced. Week two, Indiana State, followed by a road game at Syracuse, home against FAU. They should win that game. Back-to-back road games at Minnesota, at Maryland. Come back home against Nebraska a week before going back on the road to Wisconsin. That's a tough stretch. Bye week, they close out the year. Home against Iowa, on the road against Illinois, the aforementioned Illini. Northwestern at home, close out the season, rivalry game against Indiana on the road. So I could definitely see some spots in there where it feels like there are easier teams, but because it's like almost buffered so well, it also seems like the kind of schedule where it's difficult to get on any runs. You're not going to see Purdue ripping off like five straight wins because of the way the schedule is organized.
Here's the thing, though. The wild card here is, at his best, Aiden O'Connell is the best quarterback in the division.
Yeah. True.
So what does that afford you? What does that, the way that he finished last year, the way that he played against Tennessee, what does it afford you when your quarterback at his best can win many weeks? That's the interesting thing to me about Purdue,
yeah,
is that you mentioned the stretches being difficult and the specific back-to-backs, starting the season with Penn State. I didn't even realize, by the way, Penn State has started 9 straight Big Ten seasons on the road.
Yep.
That you look at their schedule, and you're totally correct. It's the winnable games on here, maybe get up to 9. The realistic winnable games, you're like, well, 4. So the truth lies in the middle. And so if you're a big believer in Jeff Brohm's in-game coaching ability for the defense to get key stops, for the offense to make smart third down calls, they're a bowl team. So I have them at 6-6 this year.
To further illustrate the point, I'm looking at our schedule matrix that we put together when we did that Secret Cake episode. We did the schedule breakdowns way back when. I had Purdue scheduled labeled as cake. And in looking at it now, I feel completely different. Honestly, it feels a lot different to me. Listening to you talk about the team and then seeing this again after a couple months, it's interesting. Purdue definitely has a lot of variability, I think, in that middle. And we'll see. Their over-under is 7.5.
Yeah, I may take the under. So here are the losable games for Purdue right now as it stands. Penn State, at Syracuse, at Minnesota, I'll say at Maryland,
yep,
if the defense isn't up to snuff,
yep.
Nebraska, Wisconsin, Iowa, at Illinois, and I'll probably end it right there. How many games? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 losable games. Yep. Realistically losable games to go 4-8. That's the issue with me. We're like, oh, yeah, I can see it. Absolutely.
All right. Who's your pick in the West again?
Oh, it's.
Or for the first time.
I'm going Iowa. You know, my mind's telling me no. But what they are able to do in terms of turning over teams more often than they should, once again, circling back to that, the continuity that's in place, I don't know. I think just them playing defense better than anybody does anything consistently in this conference, or this division, excuse me. I'll go Iowa again.
Yeah. Begrudgingly, I can sense.
Begrudgingly.
Some,
look, yeah. My heart says Nebraska. That's if I'm going to be seduced by anything, it's Nebraska. I don't want to be aligned with Graham Mertz. I don't want to be aligned with Purdue, the worst of Purdue. I don't want to be aligned with Northwestern. I don't want to be aligned with. Who am I missing here right now in terms of competitive teams?
I think you got them all. world.
Yeah. Like, the alignment is very difficult. Like, I don't want to be aligned with Tommy DeVito. So I don't love being aligned with Spencer Petras. But you give me Jack Campbell, you give me Riley Moss.
Yeah.
Interesting. They're going to lose something stupid, but I can't do the Graham Mertz thing again. I just can't. I can't bring myself to it.
All right. That's Dan's Big Ten West preview. SolidVerbal@gmail.com is how you can write in. Let us know what we missed, what we got wrong, yes, what we got right. Also, verballers.com, as we said, is the Patreon where you can go and become a certified premium verballer. You can chat about all these episodes. You can get them early. Then mm-hmm. you can chat about the episodes in our Discord, which all throughout the preseason here has been going off. Been a great place to hang if you're a college football fan and just enjoy other like-minded fans. You want me to do the MAC West?
Yeah. Do you have a team that's not Iowa? Do you like Wisconsin more? Who do you have coming out?
I guess it's Iowa. I feel the same about Iowa as you. I am intrigued by Nebraska, and I am hopeful that we're going to see a little bit more offensively from Wisconsin, something outside the norm. I want to believe in Bobby Engram. Remember that fleeting moment this summer, or I guess in the spring, when we thought maybe Caleb Williams would join Bobby Engram at Wisconsin?
Negotiation. Yeah.
I want to believe in Wisconsin doing something different. It's just I've tried believing the last couple years and it hasn't been different. So I'm a bit scarred.
What about breakthrough Sky Umah finally getting to the championship game?
I don't know about the championship game, but I'm in on the over 7.5. I took that bet many moons ago. I'm in on Minnesota getting to 8 wins.
So Minnesota has Iowa at home and Wisconsin on the road. If those are the two big threats in the division to finish the season, mind you.
Yep.
So if we think Iowa is the favorite, Minnesota getting them at home is at least a decent reason to believe in the Gophers more than usual. And if you're going to talk yourself into a more balanced team than Iowa, Minnesota, because of recent history, because of portal movement on defense, because of, you know, a return to health for Mo Ibrahim, if he's able to, you know, approximate where he was, they at least present balance.
They present balance to some extent. The limiter for me with Minnesota is the line play. And, you know, you could talk about the philosophies of different conferences and different teams and divisions within. The Big Ten is going to have pretty good line play, especially on the defensive side, I think, mostly across the board. And right. So maybe not as much the case in the Big Ten West, but certainly in the East. And that worries me on the Minnesota side. I don't know what to expect. I don't know to what extent they'll be able to open up lanes in that running game and then keep Tanner Morgan upright.
One of the best blitzing teams last year in America. Number 2 in blitz down success rate, but their overall pass rush, when they weren't blitzing, was not especially impressive. Good in the red zone situationally, decent on third down. The number 1 passing down defense in America last year in Minnesota. Now, a lot of defense is talent. A lot of it is, you know, personnel and depth and the ability to rotate in and out. So the upside of Minnesota, if they're able to develop and get the most out of the portal guys, is interesting.
Yeah.
That's all.
Should we talk MAC West?
Let's talk MAC.
Let's talk about the Big MAC West. We got Toledo, Central Michigan, Western Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Ball State, and Northern Illinois.
Seduce me.
I feel good about Toledo.
Okay.
I feel good about Toledo. Toledo went 7-6 last year. On paper, there's actually a lot to like about this team. They are, again, led by a defense that brings most of its guys back from a unit last year that was like 21st in SP Plus, defensive SP Plus. The defense alone makes them, I think, the favorite to win the MAC West. The offense last year was average, like 65th overall in the SP Plus. If you told me that they jumped just 10 spots, that they're the 55th best offense this year, I'd say they're a lock for the West. I can't guarantee that that's going to happen. But again, so much of what we talk about here is marginal improvement from year to year, or just week to week, month to month. If they can jump 10 spots, they're a lock. Daquan Finn was excellent at quarterback last year as a freshman, 18 touchdowns to just 2 interceptions. They can do so much with him because he's really a gifted runner. Jason Candle has to replace production at running back. Bryant Kobach is gone. He amassed close to 1,800 yards, 15 touchdowns on the ground last season. So there are some questions about offensively what that's going to look like. But I think there's enough returning there that Toledo's probably my pick in the West. So I feel good about the Rockets to that extent.
Yeah, lost close games to Northern Illinois, Central Michigan, yeah, and Eastern Michigan. So winnable games, to say the least. So they could, you know, if the cookie crumbles in a slightly different way, they're flirting with double digit wins.
Yeah, yeah. And to some extent, last year was a disappointment for Jason Candle. You know, he's another name who's been around forever. I would have thought that for sure he'd be coaching elsewhere, right, in college football by now. It hasn't happened yet. If he continues building this thing out, I think he'll eventually get there. But I like Toledo a lot. I also like Central Michigan. Central Michigan, I think, is interesting on a couple different levels. If you look back at what we saw last season, gave up a ton of big plays. And now they have to rebuild basically their entire defense, which is not good, but also makes them interesting, right? Like they'll feel it, I think, especially along the line, since both of their starting defensive ends are gone. They're really good. The S&P Plus did not like this defense last year at all.
Just SP. Don't include the ampersand. Don't include the ampersand. Just SP Plus.
The SP Plus, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
The production along the line truly is what stopped the SP Plus from hating them more.
Good.
They were good enough up front that it sort of worked together, and it kind of served as a limiter there. I like the pieces on offense directionally. I think Jim McElwain is building this thing in a good way, but the defense again is going to be the issue, and they're losing like seven guys there. So that to me is a problem. Offensively, I love Daniel Richardson.
Sure.
Quarterback, shorter dude, but a baller at quarterback. Lou Nichols, L-E-W Nichols, in the backfield next to him. Huge focal point for the offense. Got a ton of touches last year. Hopefully he gets some help this year. That would be nice. But either way, that tandem, the Dan Richardson and Lou Nichols combo, will at least make Central Michigan fun to watch on offense, even if defense stinks.
Yeah, and shout out Jim McElwain, who is, I think, had a seizure recently and is recovering from an episode there, but the prognosis seems to be all right. So hopefully McElwain is healthy and able to coach out the year.
Absolutely. Northern Illinois. We talked a lot of Illinois football in the show, did we not?
Of course.
The Heart Attack Huskies went 9-5 last year. They won six games by a combined 25 points, and they lost two games by a combined 26 points. This is a team that had a dreadful defense, but the offense was pretty good, and they played a really physical brand of football. Rocky Lombardi, remember him? He's back at quarterback. So is Tom Hammock at coach, really just a year removed from a lot of folks writing him off because 2020 campaign was pretty bad. This is a team that brings back a lot from last season. I don't think the success in close games is going to be a repeat act. They should get better.
Yeah.
But it's just so hard to win like that. When everything is on the margins, everything else has to go right in order to yield more fruit. So I'm mixed on Northern Illinois this year. They did well enough in those close game spots. Hopefully they've improved in the offseason, developed as a unit, that they're not going to be in so many nail biters. You know, it's tough for the fans, if nothing more. It sucks to be there.
Yeah, to the defense letting them down like that, that's tough. That's a tough way to the tightrope act. But yeah, they were really fun. And that was Rocky Lombardi. They're good.
Western Michigan's interesting as well. They have to replace Caleb Ellaby.
Yeah.
Who was their big deal quarterback. He's gone. He was a big part of the reason why Western had a top 40 offense last season. They were pretty good on offense. So now they're looking for a new quarterback. Their receiver room has been gutted as well. It figures to be a more run-oriented offense this season. So we'll see if that takes flight or not. I think the defense will take a step forward, but in my opinion, this is really just a question of offense. They're so gutted on that side of the ball and essentially starting over and rebuilding this thing that, what, they go 8-5 last? Yeah, 8-5 last season. Okay. I don't know if they're getting back to 8-5.
All right. I mean, it's a quality program, so I'm okay with it. They had a recent, his name now escapes me, at Western Michigan, a really good running back recently, and now I'm totally lost. But yeah, I mean, they're a serious program, so I'm good with Western Michigan. They won the ACC last year.
They basically won the ACC last year and beating
it's
Pitt.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat Pitt, which was a really big deal for them. But losing Caleb Ellaby, I think, is really going to hurt. So we'll see. Eastern Michigan, let's stay in the state of Michigan. 7-6 last year. Eastern is set up for half teamedness.
Definitely.
Not because the offense is that good, but because the defense is that bad and will probably stay bad. It was bad last year, 122nd in the SP Plus. The defense has some experience. There just aren't any proven pieces. And so, again, it's going to be one of those deals where the offense will pick up the slack, though they're going to be doing it with a new quarterback. Ben Bryant transferred back to Cincinnati, and it looks like it's going to be Taylor Powell who transfers in from Troy. So you know the deal with these things, right? It's hit or miss on the transfers when you're moving guys in and out, shuffling some of these key pieces. It's anyone's guess as to how that's going to come together and materialize or not materialize. We'll see. I'm not super optimistic there. I do think we'll see that half teamedness. We will see the defense again be in a really low spot.
I'm on their team profile page, our behind the scenes team profile page. They are a post-game win expectancy all-star team.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah, exactly.
The jaws of victory with Eastern Michigan winning exceedingly losable games is their special power.
Let's close it out with Ball State.
Yeah.
I am out, fully out on Ball State.
That's okay.
Fully out on Ball State. This is a year after declaring Ball State the ultimate super mega trap game for Penn State. You remember that?
Oh, right.
Remember that game last year? We were talking about it. Yep. All offseason, like, watch out for Ball State. Watch out. They were good in the MAC in 2020. They stank. Mm-hmm. Last year was a big, sad fart. I mean, it was just after a really good 2020 to go 6-7 the way they did. It was so disappointing. Now a lot's gone from that team, and it just seems like it's too much to replace in one offseason. This could be like a 3-win team.
Okay.
So I'm out. I'm out on Ball State completely this year. They let me down last year, and I'm never looking back. But if I'm picking among these teams, I think I pick Toledo. I think the defense will be solid. Defense will be really, really good. There are points of interest throughout the MAC West. And look, I mean, we talk about MACtion, right, all the time. There are plenty of points of interest across the conference, but certainly in the MAC West, just with a lot of turnover, key names that are going to be missing this year, and coaches having to try and find a replacement solution.
Fair enough. All right. Last year's champ was Northern Illinois. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have Miami of Ohio and Toledo coming out for the MAC championship game. I think I feel better about Miami. Quarterback continuity. Yeah. I like Brett Gabbert, but okay.
Yeah. I like the quarterback situation at Toledo. Daquan Finn, like I said, was really good.
Yep. And he's really fun. I like him.
He's a ton of fun. He's really good with the ball and definitely wise beyond his years. Didn't make a lot of dumb mistakes, which I think is, you know, mm-hmm. something that you see typically with freshmen, first year starting quarterbacks. Having that defense as a backstop helps. Losing Bryant Kobach's a big one, though. He was truly a focal point. Maybe more of that responsibility falls to Daquan Finn now that he's had a year in the system and has proven that he's not going to do anything stupid with the ball. That would be my suspicion. I think Jason Candle knows how to coach and win like that. But
yeah, never helps, by the way, when you're surprised that Jason Candle hasn't gotten a bigger job when the last guy got that bigger job.
I know.
And was atrocious.
I know.
A big mistake. So that hurts.
All right. Well, there you have it. Big Ten West, MAC West. We appreciate everybody stopping on by, downloading, hopefully subscribing. If you have not yet clicked that button, we hope you enjoy the show. We hope you'll tell your friends about the show if you've already subscribed. You can find the Solid Verbal anywhere, really, truly anywhere. Just let us know if we've missed anything. If there's anything you want to hear more about, solidverbal@gmail.com. Hit us up with social media, the works, pretty much all over the place. Solid Verbal Live, Dan. Tell the folks about Solid Verbal Live real quick.
Get on solidverballive.com. Late August, Chicago, Illinois. The Fantasy Things Draft. Tater Tots. Ty. Dan. Verballers everywhere. Chicago in the summer. It's amazing. And then we're in Atlanta in December. We're in New York in October. We're in LA ahead of the national championship game at the world famous historic Troubadour a couple of nights before the national championship game in LA. Hope to see you. I mean, the real ones will be at all four, Ty.
We'll be at all four.
By that, I mean you and I.
Yeah, that's right. We're the only four. Two. Yeah.
Guaranteed. Yeah. Can't wait to see you live. But check out solidverballive.com. Fantasy Things Show late August. right here in Chicago. Can't wait to see you.
Verballers.com is the Patreon where you get early access and all sorts of other bonus perks as a certified and premium Verballer. Again, Verballers.com. And as we said at the top of the show, we need some social media help for the season ahead. So if you're interested and qualified, shoot us an email with all your stuff to apply@solidverbal.com. That's all I got, Dan.
I'm in, Ty. That's all I'm saying. I'm in.
That guy over there, all in. His name, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, thanks so much for downloading, listening, supporting. We will talk to you all soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.